Hi, you guys. Welcome back to episode number 6 of That's So Bro. Yoshan, what are we talking about today?
We're going to be talking about a much serious topic. It's called depression. That's So Bro with Amanda
and
Yoshan.
And we want to bring attention to anybody else who might be triggered by this topic. It might delve into something a bit sad. So if this is something that you find very hard to take, please feel free to watch one of our other episodes. And maybe come back to this when you feel like it. Also, we are going to concentrate on how we've personally dealt with the depression in our lives. And this is our personal take on it. And if there are points that maybe you feel that you don't agree with, maybe start your own podcast and talk about that there. But today, we're going to talk about our experiences. All right, Rochali, how's it going?
Hi, guys. I'm Rochali. Nice to meet y'all.
Rochali's back, as per demand. All right. Rochali, what is the definition of depression? Rochali, as an inspiring psychologist.
Aspiring psychologist.
What is the definition of depression, please?
The definition of depression, according to the APA, which is the American Psychological Association's definition, is extreme feelings of sadness or despair over a prolonged period of time.
Right.
Which is usually sometimes 2 weeks or more.
Okay. The reason why we want to do this topic today was because I know that June is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month, and men's mental health is a topic that is not too touched upon, even today, even in media. It's everything else first and then comes to guys, and suicide led by depression is still the second biggest form or cause of death in men. So I think this is a very touching topic because we've all been through some form of depression whatsoever, and I'd rather it be destigmatized as opposed to it just being a taboo topic that, oh my God, yeah, I feel sad, but I'm not supposed to talk about it. Resh is going to take us through some of the symptoms of depression. So we can start off with what exactly the people who seem to have depression might experience.
So guys, it's depressive mood. So it's depressive mood is feelings of sadness, loneliness, helplessness. So why people say, I think it's easy to misconstrue as well when people are like, oh, I'm depressed, because they focus on or they misconstrue what depression is and what depressed moods are.
Right.
Do you get what I mean? And so it's diminished interest, weight loss, insomnia, psychomotor retardation, that is lethargic movements. Their movements are very different.
Right.
Sometimes they are fatigued, so they can't get out of bed. They can't do the simplest tasks. They feel worthlessness. You sometimes contemplate death, and they have the inability to concentrate.
Is fatigue and laziness the same thing?
Yes. Oh, no. Well, fatigue is... Sorry. It's an extreme version. Fatigue is an extreme version of laziness. Laziness, you can take yourself out of it.
Right.
Fatigue, I feel like, is a prolonged period of experiencing the inability to do anything.
Okay.
Tiredness.
That you can't overcome even if you wanted to. Okay. That being said, if somebody who is listening to this might be experiencing one or two or a couple of these things, who should they talk to, Rochali?
You guys should...
Rochali to the mic, darling.
Okay. You guys... Sorry. You guys should contact the National Institute of Mental Health, which is NIMH, on 1926, or the CCC line, which is 1333, or Sumitreo on 2682535.
Even when you Google depression or anything, the first thing Google says are those numbers.
Yeah.
Right. So it is available on Google. And if anybody is going through this, we very seriously recommend you talk to a professional.
Yeah.
And get some help.
And these services are free. Right. And anonymous.
And anonymous. That being the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Right. That being said, Yoshan, have you been through an episode of depression in your life?
I have, but I'm really not in that mindset to discuss about it. But yeah, I have been through some bad periods.
Okay.
And I don't know, somehow got through them. What about you, Amanda? Have you been?
Before you start on that, I feel like that is so important to talk about. I feel like the fact that he did acknowledge it and is choosing not to talk about it just means that it is so paramount and it is something that people have experienced and it is very deep.
Right.
And if you choose not to talk about it, I feel like that is completely valid. So thank you for shedding light on that aspect as well.
You're welcome. You're welcome to everyone. You're welcome, Takshi.
Yeah, man. I think when I was just finishing school, I had this excessive need to become a pilot, and I was told by my parents, because we didn't have the financial capacity for it, that I couldn't do it, and I was doing a part-time job at Abans, and I had to make it a full-time job because I told my dad that, you know, I'll finance it myself. Because I told them that I would finance it myself, and because this is the only job I had, the job I was doing, which was marketing, which is not such a bad job actually, to me was very depressive, because I had to watch, and that was the start of social media, because you're always on Facebook. So I watched my friends go to university in different countries, and they would constantly upload posts and stories about how they're living the life they want to live. Meanwhile, I was nowhere close to anywhere doing anything close to flying.
Oh my God, yes.
I had to reconvince myself thinking, okay, so maybe I won't be the pilot I want to be. Maybe what I can do is in about 30 or 40 years, maybe I can buy the plane and have the pilot then teach me. Which is a flying violation, because the pilot can't say, why don't you take it now, sir? Here you go. So you can't do that either. And that is something I had to always convince myself to do. And you're working Monday to Saturday, and it's a lot of convincing you to do.
Mm.
I didn't like the work environment I was in. I didn't like a majority of the people I was working with. And that is the time that I got excessively into alcohol abuse and substance. I was smoking like a pack and a half a day.
What?
We would drink every day, if not every other day. And it was just one big blur of emotion, right? And it got to a point where, I don't know how true this statement is, but somewhere along the line, somebody told me that if when you're smoking, you feel like back pains, that means that the smoke has burned through your lung or some nonsense like that, right? And I was a very gullible boy, so I really truly believe that. So I would smoke until I would feel that pain. And I would hope that I would not wake up the next day. I would take a life insurance against my life and think that my parents and everybody else who was a part of my life would be much better off without me being in the picture. Maybe they can take the 1.5 million, so cheap, 1.5 million rupees that was guaranteed on my life. And maybe that would be better than me being alive, because I just really did not want to be alive.
Yeah.
Right? Back then, you won a ship and you were just starting.
Your life is worth 1.5 million. Now I know. You want a price on someone? 1.5 mil.
We said we won't make jokes on this episode, and here we are. All right.
It's good. It's good. Yeah.
So, the saddest thing about that is my brother was my closest friend. Right, my brother was my closest friend because I wasn't. I mean, you were on a ship. My other school friends were in school. Sorry, they were in university in different countries. So I wasn't. Nobody was there. One was in two were in UK. One was in Malaysia. He's on a ship somewhere. So Marley was the closest thing. So I had nobody to talk to, and what I would do is I would choose to drink away my problems so I would forget the fact that I had to go back to work tomorrow at 8:30. So that was the entire point of it. But I also realized that to the point of overcoming it, you get to a point where your younger brother finds you drunk. All right. And he found me drunk in a really bad way. Right? And you know, in essence, he saved my life that night. So I won't get too deeply into it.
Mm.
But if he didn't slap me, I wouldn't be here talking about it.
Yeah.
So if anything, I owe that annoying man my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I also realized that There is, okay, so this is the easy way out, all right? You call it quits, you take a loan against your life, and you think, all right, maybe that'll be better off for it. I realized that there has to be something more. I can be an inspiration to this man who saved my life. And my parents have gone through too much shit for me to just call it quits here.
Mm-hmm.
And more than any of that, I realized that I have gone through too much shit in my life for this to be the ending. You know, like, you can go to a cemetery and you see on that tombstone, it says, Mrs. Seniwaratna.
Yeah.
Devout wife, loving mother, was a teacher, that's it, right?
Yeah.
At that point, I realized there has to be something more to life than just, I did a 9-to-5 and I called it quits.
Yeah.
So that's what pushed me, that then David Goggins and Eric Thomas and all these people, that's what pushed me to actually, to take a stand and to make a change, to stop this shit.
Yeah.
So this June on the 8th would be my 12th or 13th year of being sober.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And so that was such a powerful thing to me, because in essence, something that brings so many people down, that people call a vice that they can't control, I was able to do it. Despite, so what happens is, when you tell your friends that, Masham, today's the last day I'm going to drink. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm not going to smoke anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they say, they're terrible friends, is, ayo, bro, just have one more with me and then tomorrow you can quit. You know, or they laugh at your face saying, you're never going to quit. Both which happened. Both which times I relapsed. I got back into it. I got myself out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cycle. But the 8th of June, so many years ago, was the last time I had it. So when it comes to the symptoms you spoke about, right? Never wanted to go to sleep as well. So I don't know if that counts as
insomnia.
Yeah. And substance abuse was one of my highlights.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is one thing I wanted to bring attention to. Yes, now in the current day, substance abuse should be added to this list, because I think people try to escape from this pain that they're feeling. So drinking, weed, or sometimes even cutting, because people try to
alleviate it,
but also encapsulate that pain through a physical means. So I think that's what I've heard of people saying. They feel so much pain that they exact pain on themselves to quantify it.
Right. Which is also interesting, because I think right now depression is an all-time high.
Yes, it's the most common.
Oh, is it?
It's the most common mental illness in the current day, and then anxiety and the rest follow.
Oh. That's also interesting, because I found out that in the States, substance abuse has actually overtaken alcoholism. So now there are more... The propensity for you to, let's say, even indulge in weed,
mm-mm-mm,
is now higher than alcoholics.
Yeah, and yes, I understand. Like, this is kind of going off topic, but yes, I understand people say that weed and things are medicinal, but it's medicinal only to very few milligrams.
Right.
Apart from that, any kind of drug is bad.
Right.
Even though you say, oh, I'm just trying it for the first time, and I've studied this to say that yes, it is bad, and there's no need to indulge, or there's no need to say try it out because everyone else is doing it, because sometimes depending on a person's body chemistry, drugs can react differently.
Okay.
So, and that could lead to psychological disorders.
You should get that on a t-shirt. There is no need for weed.
But I understand the hype. So, eat to each their own.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, bro?
What if the person doesn't show those symptoms? Are they still going through depression? Or do they have to show those symptoms that you mentioned?
So depression is a spectrum. So, people, according to the symptoms, or there's this thing called the major depressive disorder diagnosis criteria.
Sorry?
I know, it's the MDD. Okay, I'm
just going to... That should be on a t-shirt.
MDD! But it says when you go to a psychologist, they usually take these symptoms. If you have 2 to 4, then you're within the mild to moderate area.
Okay.
For a prolonged period. But then if you have over 4, so then it's more chronic. And it's chronic because it has lasted over 2 weeks.
Right.
and it's more severe. So when it debilitates you, by debilitating, it means you can't do any type of work. Right. You socially isolate yourself. You don't get out, and you just, I'm just going to use this word loosely, rot.
Right.
And choosing to do so, then it becomes a disorder.
Okay. Does that mean that I have to go to a psychologist for me to actually be depressed? Or can I self-diagnose?
I, as a practitioner, please go seek help.
Right.
Because why would you rely on something that's online? Yes, there are online services. By all means, seek those. You might as well properly know, rather than just saying, oh yes, I had this because Google told me so.
When you have a heart attack, you know what? I'm dying. And call your wife, hey, I'm dying.
According to Google, I think my kid is about to burst.
Yeah, but see, that is what's happening now, right? That's why there's so much misinformation. People think that because they have these certain feelings, that they have this disorder.
Right.
But behind these feelings, there are reasons and there are thought patterns and there are behaviors. And it is only when we take your history that we kind of understand the severity of the case.
Right.
So you diagnosing yourself.
Makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
I recently had an episode where my stomach was paining.
Okay.
I Googled it. And Google was like, yeah, you have, you know, liver failure, pancreatitis or whatever.
And you're like...
And I was like, yeah, I'm going to die. It was like 3 a.m. And my wife, by the way, is a medical profession. So I didn't want to wake her up, but I was in a lot of pain, you know. And I was taking like gas meds and all that. Finally, because of the pain and I was struggling, she woke up and she's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I have a pain. As per Google, I'm going to lose something. My life, probably.
Oh, no.
She looks at me and is like, yeah, you look like you're dying. She didn't even panic. She's so calm in that situation. I was like freaking out. I thought I was going to die. It was a bloody story. Okay. Google didn't even tell that it was a story. It wasn't even in the list of possible...
See what I mean? Google misses out. Go seek help.
Pow. Google has saved my ass in so many situations.
Oh, yeah?
I wouldn't say in a medical situation.
I forgot. What was I going to talk? Google AI. Google AI is really winning the case.
I've never used Google AI. So
oh, really?
I have to use it.
Google AI also recommends if you're upset to jump off a bridge.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I saw that.
There's a little trigger warning right here.
I saw that.
Please contact NIMH, please.
I saw that. It's like, I'm feeling really sad. What should I do? And then Google's like, hey, why don't you go? It gives the directions also.
It gives the directions.
Turn here. And then you reach the Golden Gate Bridge, stand on the edge, and...
This is so bro. This is
Google,
so
Google,
bro.
AI is so bro.
I saw it. I saw that clip on the internet also. Right. I don't know if it's made up, though.
No. I think it's a real thing because... A lot of sources seem to be saying that Google AI seems to be like...
Oh my god. Okay, but coming back to the serious topic, sorry to be the one, but yes, we're talking about suicide, yes?
Right.
You mentioned this in your story, how there were multiple attempts and it was in one night, and the feeling you felt in that one night was very intense, right?
No. There were multiple times where I wish I would...
You wish you would die.
Yeah, I would expire overnight.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
It's just that it would get... I would start feeling it more when I got back home.
Mm.
And I think that was because I was reminded that I had to go back to work the next day.
Yeah.
That was the depressing part.
Mm.
It's not that it came and went one day. It's just that for a long... Maybe like...
It was prolonged.
Yeah,
hence why.
Yeah.
But when I'm talking about suicidality, I guess... Intense feelings, or when we talk about them, we talk about a concentration of these emotions felt. Obviously, yes, there is a plan and all of these things,
right.
But when it comes to the peak of those feelings, it lasts for a period of time.
Right.
In the instant, there is someone, a protective factor. That mitigation of suicide can be done. It can be mitigated. That person can be saved.
So what you're saying is basically if somebody was
so like your brother was there, but
oh right,
that is one case. But if there was someone to talk to someone, hence why those suicide helplines are there, right?
Right.
So in those intense feelings, when you feel like it's just
do or die.
Yes, but and there have been stories. There have been stories that my teachers and professors and I have researched have shown that after those intense feelings, the next day they're just like, I want to live. They've found their purpose.
Right.
So it is a few moments of sincere hopelessness, and I would say nihilism even, that if you can stay with them, it can be overcome.
Interesting. How did, so you said you went through an episode, right? How did you cope or get over that episode? Have you gotten over it?
I have had a few episodes. So some of the episodes I have.
Okay.
What happened was during school time, I was into sports.
Right.
I focused all my time on sports. I didn't do anything much. After school activities were the things that I focused on,
right.
Like clubs, hanging out with people, making connections with this other kids, you know?
With the girls?
Girls, guys, I didn't discriminate. I mean, I don't know what she's thinking about.
God, I'm okay.
I'm friends with everyone. I'm friends with everyone.
See, Roshan has a very innocent way of saying, I'm friends with everyone. Roshan goes straight to the gutter.
She needs some soon. Satish, where are you? We need a timestamp. Yeah, so because of the whole sports thing, I tend to overcome these feelings that I had.
Right.
And I had great friends back then, you know. We used to hang out all the time, play, do all sorts of shit. But as I grew up, that friend circle reduced. My ability to do the sports also went away because I started focusing on other things. And then I started finding other ways to overcome it, like watching stuff on the internet about these things, okay. Learning about
wow.
It, and being self-aware, understanding that I am depressed. But I never took the step of meeting a professional
right.
Because of the stigma behind it. I mean,
right.
In Sri Lanka, going to a therapist means it's like,
yeah.
You know, going to a whole house.
Right.
I'm serious.
But I think that is such a valid point, though.
That's a great bloody point.
That is so valid.
Like all the artists.
I think you can go to a whole house with a bit more pride.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
You can go
at least your buddies will be like, yo, that's
yeah.
Great.
If you go to a therapist place, even your buddies will be like, what the hell? And your aunties will be like, annaru to pisu. At least if I go to a whole house, I get laid at least.
Right.
Yeah. Whole house aside, as I grew up, I found other ways of finding myself through it, reading about it, understanding it, watching movies and TV series that are related to this, where the main character is going through these things and seeing how they overcome it.
Okay.
Understanding that I wasn't alone helped a lot.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And
that's beautiful.
I had a friend who was working with Sumitra.
Okay.
So she kind of spoke to me whenever I felt this negative feeling. And she kind of opened this a perspective, a new way of looking at it. And she said that moment of hopelessness.
Right.
Just get through that. And the next day you feel much better. So yeah, so I had a few friends here and there. But again, it depends from person to person how you can overcome. I guess you would have had other ways of overcoming.
My thing, bro, was I felt very alone, right? I have never felt so lonely in my life.
Like you'll be with a group of friends and still feel alone.
I would be with everybody in office
yeah,
and
know.
Still feel alone.
I
would
that.
Go and drink with my friends and still feel alone.
I understand that.
Yeah, and I would come back home and be reminded that I actually am very much alone. That nobody cares about you.
The sentence is, if you disappear right now, would
no,
anyone give an ass?
Yeah.
That's the sentence.
And I realized that nobody would, right? I felt that even in work, I was terrible. Obviously, I was terrible, dude. I was drunk half the time. I was smoking the other half the time. Obviously, I was shitting all over the workplace.
I, of course, used the toilet.
Right, right. I used the workplace. 25, 26. Hey, Satish, take notes. All right. So my issue was, considering the fact that I was terrible at work anyway and I was not getting anywhere, my heart was never in it. So why would I take it seriously? Yeah. And it was constantly reminded to me that I had no outs, right? That there is nobody I can go to with my problems. My mom doesn't care. My dad doesn't care. Or it's not that they don't care. It's just that they can't help me. Because I burned that bridge. I said, you save money for Monday, all right? So I can't go back and say, hey, I was joking.
Yeah.
Give me that money back. Right?
Do you think your mom doesn't care, or your mom would have overreacted?
That's actually a great point. I think if in brown culture you tell your mom, I am feeling suicidal, it won't be, oh, okay, do you want to talk about it? It'll be, oh, my darling!
Because I know what my mom would do. She will freak out. First, she'll call the temple.
Oh, okay.
She'll book one of those things where the demon does, oh, yeah, cut. She'll buy all the lemon in the supermarket and not make a lemon juice. Yeah? Then she will actually be pissed off at me and scold me for even...
Burwa!
And then my dad in the other side will be like, yeah, he's a burwa, he's a burwa. Agree to whatever my mom says. Yeah, so I think approaching to parents of that generation, because they didn't have this mental health thing, awareness, depression wasn't a thing spoken about. Back then, going to a therapist is worse than whole house, I think.
I don't think... Maybe psychiatry was, or psychologist was a profession that was profound back then. Yeah. But it wasn't as advertised as it is now.
But that is because of popular culture. Because of globalization, the ideas of mental health and mental illness has spread.
Right.
Yes, it is there. But it's still a stigma in Sri Lanka, even though we're having this conversation.
Back then, the only therapy you can get is in the Kopi Kade.
How so?
Because all the uncles are there playing checkers. I'll be like, me, yere gani mata gehuani. Oh, yo, gehuani, ayo. But that's not how you play checkers, that's carom.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, that's my ignorance.
Checkers is...
I've never played checkers, man. I love carom. They play carom. In my Kopi Kade, they play carom. They were eating bananas, they were drinking plain tea, and they were playing carom.
Yes.
And there were no chicks.
There were no chicks.
Just the dudes.
It's a no
except
girl.
Except for the Tay
no
auntie.
Girls club.
She like
Tay Archie. She's listening to everything. She's the therapist.
She's the therapist.
But no confidentiality.
I should tell everybody.
Yeah, now she has that thing where she has to be secret. No?
Yeah, confidentiality.
She's the loudspeaker.
Really good, huh?
Well, I've thought about this a lot. Clearly. A lot of free time.
Coming back, I think what I went through was the fact that I realized that there was nobody for me. And when I first got into even working out, which is one of the first steps I took to overcome this, there were two people I really wanted to be like. One was Bruce Lee, master of everything in the world.
How's it going with him?
He's all right. No?
He's all right. Huh?
He's acting in a new movie with Kevin Hart, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the second Bruce was Bruce Wayne.
Ah, I can't say anything.
Yoshan doesn't like Batman. Yoshan hates Batman. Yoshan's like, he likes Thor or something. Like that. Yeah, exactly.
I puked in my mouth.
So I was a big Batman fan because even in his life, he had to pull himself out. Yes, Alfred was there and all that is true. But if he didn't go the extra mile, which I think is why a lot of guys truly fall in love with Batman, the idea of Batman. It is that he's the most mortal superhero
out
there. And he's still one of the biggest threats, if not the biggest threat. So to me, it was always about either impressing the two Bruces or being like the two Bruces.
Yeah.
So I had to willfully pull myself out of the almost abyss I was in. So to me, it wasn't the fact that I had somebody to talk to. It was the fact that I realized that I had to be better than what I was and not take the easy way out. And to me, that was very empowering too. Again, because what some people refuse to give up almost is that one beer in a while is okay now, was something I had to really fight hard against and something I had to pull myself out of, even though there were people to give me another beer and shove another cigarette into my hand.
I have a question.
Hit me.
Am I one of the friends who gave you the beer?
I don't think so much. I think when you were in your drinking phase, I was done with my drinking phase.
Oh, am I late bloomer?
What a shame.
What a shame.
But I want to say, like, That is so important for people to hear and listen, because even in therapy, yes, your psychologist is there to help you. We give you the tools, but right. the rest is up to you, for you to do what is needed for you to do your homework. So we give you little homeworks and stuff like that to do. Depending
yeah, that'll
on...
make people want to come. Hey, we give you homework. Come.
No, as in like...
Baby money.
Remember school?
Let me judge you. Give you homework and you pay me.
Guys, what I mean that...
Yes, Michelle. This is a great ad for you to go. Get some therapy, get some homework. Yeah.
No, but what I mean is...
Rashad, we'll fix your mind. It's okay.
Talk about your homework.
No, but see, you have to help yourself. No one else can help you if you don't help yourself.
I said that in every buffet.
Right.
Right, exactly. So we give you the tools and we give you the guidelines, but see, you wanted to get yourself out of there.
Right.
It is what you just described. What both of you all described is how it actually happens. So there are these things called core beliefs, okay. right? Core beliefs are basically what you think. So I'm worthless, I am lonely, I will never find friends. And these beliefs become negative automatic thoughts. So if something slightly unfortunate happens, you immediately switch to, this is my life. My life is useless.
I deserve nothing better than this.
I deserve nothing better. No one's there for me. No one's going to love me.
Right.
So these become, there's like this triad, right? We don't know which one comes first, but emotions usually influence thoughts and thoughts influence behaviors. And then it becomes a cycle. So your emotion of being, I'm sad, I'm worthless becomes the thought.
Right.
No one is going to find any worth in me. No one's going to be there for me.
Right.
And then social isolation happens. And you don't make an effort to change your patterns. So then it becomes a cycle.
You make that your personality.
Exactly.
Right.
So that what happens in therapy is that we restructure your thoughts. It's cognitive restructuring.
Right.
So we take that debilitating thought and we challenge it. We ask, why do you think that? And then usually the person comes to an understanding of, I don't know why. I don't know why I think that. I don't know, maybe because someone told me this. Okay. And then we start breaking it down. But see...
Sounds like brainwash with extra steps.
With homework.
Guys, you're taking...
We are talking about a very serious thing.
It's a very serious thing. Please, I'm being an idiot. I'm being a total idiot.
No, but see, it's because you wanted to seek help
right.
that you changed your narrative. It's because you wanted to learn more about what you were going through in your own ways. You Googled it. You watched the movies. You sought healthy friends.
It's
both an active part on what your own individual
right.
mechanisms are coping, which is really helpful.
It's on you, basically.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Look at
yes, people around you have to help. They're called protective factors. They boost your like process
okay.
of getting better.
This is not to add worth to this conversation, but you may get very pissed off. But we were thinking of merchandising. Can you repeat the core beliefs, that the three things you said? Because that will make a great t-shirt.
No.
I have no friends. What is that? I have no friends. I'm worthless. What, the three things you said?
Yes, and then social isolation.
Yeah, that should be a t-shirt.
Which is why I watched That So Bro.
Go to therapy.
If you want the merchandise t-shirt, let us know. We'll send it right to your house.
Please just drop us a DM on our IGs. Their IGs, not mine.
You have IG?
I have IG.
Wow. Free therapist on IG.
No.
let me bring it this way. What if one of your friends was going through depression, right? Because that I was saying is something that we realize our friends might be going through, but we don't know how to address it properly. Personal experience wise. How would you, Yashar Pereira, solve that situation?
Growing up, I did a very bad thing.
Okay.
A friend of mine kept saying that he was sad, he was miserable, you know. I came from this culture where rub dirt. I said it in the last podcast, just walk it off. And I was like, just walk it off. What the hell? He's like, I'm sad. For what? He doesn't even know what he's sad about.
Right.
So I used to be like, walk it off. You have a roof. You have food. You have water. What are you sad about?
Right.
Right. And one day he started talking about unaliving himself.
Mm. Okay.
At that point, I didn't understand, you know, that this is depression. This is a real thing. It's a mental condition. I didn't understand. I just thought this guy was just acting out to get attention. Right. A lot of people mistake it for that.
Right.
Because I didn't know what it was. So I kind of made fun of the whole thing, which I'm very regretful now. I wish I never did it.
Okay.
Then after some time, he and I, we kind of had a falling out. But he came back. Okay. We spoke.
Oh, I thought after we had a falling out, and after that he fell out something, and I was like, here we go. And that's the episode. That's so, bro. Thanks so much for watching.
No, he came back. He went abroad because he was not functioning. Like, he was having a very severe case of depression. They had to send him abroad to get the treatment.
Right.
He came back, and I apologized to him, because by then when he came back, I understood what it was.
Right.
I had a better idea of what I did wrong. And I explained to him that I was sorry, and he understood immediately.
Right.
And he told me his experience, you know, the whole fixing yourself, homework, you know, even though I made fun of it, it's a real thing.
Right.
And all that. And now he's a functioning adult. He's working. He's doing great. But whenever he feels like he's going back to that, you know, he always lets us know, okay, I'm going back there.
Okay.
Do you want to, you know, have a chat? And even though we meet, we don't really talk about his issues. We just talk like that's so bro stuff.
Right.
We laugh. And then he's like, bro, thanks. I feel better. And we go our separate ways.
Right.
But the thing is, I really regretted that as a kid. I must have been like 15 or 16 when that happened. It still haunts me. Like that I made fun of that. Okay. I made fun of the fact that he was sad. And I really regret it. But as I grew up and I found out when someone was like, oh, I'm sad, I'm this thing, I would be more empathetic.
Right.
Right? I'd be like, bro, you're sad, let's go, let's have a chat. Because that's all I can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing else I can do. I don't have her knowledge. What I can do is we can take something random, we can laugh about it, go to the movies, laugh about that. That's as much as help that I can give you.
Right.
Have a meal maybe.
Yeah.
But if you want more than that, then you have to find someone who is equipped to help you in that way.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. So as a friend, that's all I can do. And sorry.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Memories. Yeah, so that's all I can do. And I feel that if I can do more, I'll try. But I feel like that's all I can do. What about you? What would you?
I think, man, you basically summed it up. I don't think it is in my place to try and advise. And I also don't think that, so if I was where I was back then, I don't think I was looking for advice.
Mm.
What I was looking for was for anybody to just be to help me forget the fact that I felt this way. So I think what you were doing is perfectly fine. I think maybe I'd do the same thing. I would maybe try to push the person or take the person to therapy.
Yeah.
I didn't know about therapy.
Okay. I'm not saying that you did something wrong. By all means, the fact that you actually found this guy out and apologized and that you're who you are right now.
It haunted me a lot.
Yeah. That's much better than what I can do right now. I can say it just by saying that you're a much bigger human being than I am right now.
In every way, I'm bigger.
No, but accountability.
Yeah.
That is the biggest thing.
My account's all empty.
Okay, Yashan.
If anyone wants to hire Yashan, please.
What I'm trying to say...
Buy our merchandise.
Buy our depressed merchandise, yes. What I'm trying to say is I don't think there's anything more than what you said I can do or I should do. I don't think providing or trying to be the guy who gives solutions to somebody who says that they're upset and they feel a certain way is what that person is looking for.
Is looking for, exactly. Yeah. I feel like when people come, when your friends come up to you, being there and enjoying their company is what they need. Like, just presence.
Right.
Is
maybe even if you start giving solutions, like, oh, Masha, so now you feel this way, maybe we should do this. And
I feel like there is a possibility.
I think that just gets annoying after a while.
Or a possibility for them to shut you out.
Yeah. Because you're just another voice then.
Yeah.
Right. Fair enough. But then, how about this? So now, I know for a fact that there's a clear-cut difference between me talking to Yashan as a bro,
mm-mm,
right? Saying, Yashan, so like Yoshan taking me out to watch a movie.
Yeah.
Versus, say, hypothetically, say, between the two parts, so say Yoshan's wife was depressed or Yoshan was depressed, what do you think the partner should do?
Right. So, from personal experiences,
right.
So me being the partner to a depressed person.
She had a partner.
Tea.
Spilling.
Yes. Sometimes I think as the partner, you feel like it is all up to you to save this person or to be the safe space for this person. Yes, you are the safe space, but sometimes you need to give them room for themselves to feel whatever they're feeling.
Right.
And usually isolation happens. But in those moments of isolation, understand it is very important for the partner who's experiencing their other partner go through this episode that it's not their fault.
Okay.
I feel usually there's a lot of internalizing that happens.
I am the reason.
I am the reason. They can't talk to me. Why can't they talk to me? I am their partner. They right. should be able to talk to me about these things. Right? But understanding that it is their process.
Right.
That is one thing. But also...
And also, husbands, you tend not to speak about.
I think that is a thing. I think guys just don't want to talk about it. Even to their partners,
yeah.
Which I don't know. Maybe it's even with even creating a safe space, it still is something impossible. It's hard for guys.
I can tell you that because we both went to a men's circle.
Okay.
And even if we were assured a safe space,
yeah.
and told that nothing from this space will be spoken outside, we found it very hard to be out loud and pronouncing, okay, so this is my problem.
Yeah.
Random bunch of strangers who might never have any influence on my life whatsoever. I don't feel safe about talking about this thing. So what I'll do is instead of talking about the real problem, I'll just talk about like either a smaller problem or a make-believe problem.
Yeah.
And just test the waters and see how it goes.
There's a theory that I have why the guy doesn't tell the wife that... it's not actually a theory, it's something that I've heard in another podcast. The man sees himself as the provider.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be a burden to his wife and kids.
Right.
He doesn't need to tell his wife, you know, dude, I'm not feeding well. Because the wife is... I could be wrong. But in the general context, in a stereotypical marriage, the guy has to be the backbone, right? The foundation. If your foundation is collapsing, if your foundation is breaking, and he comes and tells you, you know, like, assuming you're my wife, I'm like, you know, I'm not feeling great. Then the wife is going to feel uncomfortable, right? Because the wife cannot help. She's not equipped to help.
Right.
So that's why the guy tends to shut it off,
right.
not tell her anything, try to fix it by himself, try to, you know, mold the clay in such a way that he can keep being the foundation. So the wife, the kids, everyone's happy, they're dependent. But then it can backfire. That's what I feel.
I also heard another podcast where either it was a podcast or a lady who used to write... for counseling, and she used to mainly talk about the women's aspect of it, where for one of her book signings a gentleman came across and said it's very convenient for you that you're talking about this side only. And she asked why, and he said, my wife and daughters would rather die than watch me fall from the horse than catch me. They would rather die watch me on that horse, on that white horse, then catch me when I fall. And I think that actually brings us to our next point, which is the fact that guys and girls, they deal with depression in different ways, right? So like we're talking about right now, it is always the facade that I am completely fine. You are supposed to be, like you said, the rock. You are the foundation. You cannot falter even if you are dying on the inside.
Even if you're not married, even if you're still a son to your parents, you have to be that rock. I mean, I know it's not a written law, but
it's what you're feeling.
Yeah, it's a feeling. Yeah. It's a responsibility as a man.
Yeah.
You know, it's in your 1,000 years of genetical whatever.
Yeah.
So it's in your body. Okay, mom, I'm sad, but I'm not going to tell. You know, I'm going to be, mom, don't worry, I got it.
Yeah.
Dad, don't worry, I got it.
If you're breaking on the inside,
yeah.
you show that pretty face.
And that's what backfires.
Yeah.
That really backfires. That sometimes you can't really take it. And then you just...
Yeah.
I mean, and again, jumping the point that this is, again, about men's mental health.
Yeah.
If you watch a majority of the videos where they say, if you watch a majority of the videos that showcase the fact that these people unlike themselves, they show videos of like 2 hours before, 1 week before, a couple of minutes before actually should happen. And they're over the moon. They're playing with their kids. They're running around. They're laughing their asses off. And then you get the sadness. For example, Robin Williams, right? One of the world's most prominent comics. Nobody saw it coming, right? Chester Bennington, the lead singer of Linkin Park. Mm-hmm. There is a 2 hour before he actually finished himself off.
Really?
Yeah. And he's fine.
Yeah.
Or they appear fine.
Yeah. Yes.
They say that before they do the task, they start to feel really happy and relaxed because they found a way out. Like, there's a theory there.
Oh, wow. Right. Because it's a solution.
They found the solution. They just need to pull the trigger. So they start becoming... It's a sign. If someone's really... Again, this is... I don't know if it's true.
Right.
Again, from what I've seen on the internet, they can be depressed for a really long period. They'll be silent. They won't talk. And then suddenly, they become very happy.
Like a manic happiness.
Probably. Yeah. And they are like super happy. They're very jovial. They give their stuff away. Yeah. You know, they're like out of this world. And actually, it's because they...